largest hospital networks unload facilities in unprecedented retreat from bed count. 8 major health systems are actively divesting hospital assets in 2026, accelerating a restructuring wave that reflects deteriorating operating economics, rising capital costs, and a federal policy environment now hostile to the revenue assumptions that justified prior acquisitions. This is not a cyclical trimming. Health systems bought aggressively through the 2010s and early 2020s on the premise that scale produced margin. It did not. Labor costs expanded faster than reimbursement. Interest rates repriced the cost of carrying those assets. And in 2026, 2 additional policy shocks, a White House executive order rewriting the childhood vaccine schedule, and a surprise FDA manufacturing rejection of a radiopharmaceutical therapy with significant GE Peanut market implications, are compressing the forward revenue visibility that acquirers need to justify system-level deal multiples. The seller's rationale is clear. The buyer calculus is the story. The details of individual transaction values in the Becker's hospital review reporting were not disclosed publicly. What is observable is the pattern. Multiple large, creditworthy health systems are simultaneously choosing divestiture over retention, which signals a structural repricing of hospital asset values rather than idiosyncratic distress at any one institution. The gloves are off once again, Heidi Overton, a health policy advisor at the White House, said following President Trump's signing of a vaccine executive order on August 10, 2026, describing the administration's renewed willingness to intervene directly in clinical and immunization policy. That statement carries weight beyond vaccine policy. For hospital systems whose revenue mix includes pediatric services, primary care networks, and outpatient preventive medicine, a federal government that reconfigures the childhood immunization schedule by executive order rather than through scientific advisory committees introduces a new category of volume risk. Hospital administrators are now pricing the possibility that vaccination rates fall, preventable disease burden rises, and downstream acute care volumes become less predictable, not more. 8 sellers, 1 macro signal. The scale bet is unwinding the thesis behind a decade of hospital consolidation was that larger networks could negotiate better rates with commercial insurers, spread fixed costs across more facilities, and attract capital at lower cost than standalone community hospitals. The math worked when interest rates were near zero and labor markets were loose. Neither condition holds in 2026. The systems now selling assets are not selling because the individual hospitals are necessarily unprofitable in isolation. They are selling because the capital required to sustain, upgrade, and staff those facilities is no longer justified by the marginal contribution to the parent system's balance sheet. This mirrors the 2015 to 2019 wave of academic medical center divestitures of rural and critical access hospitals, where the same logic applied at a smaller scale. The 2026 version is larger in scope and involves systems that were considered acquirers as recently as 2022. For private equity buyers and infrastructure-focused health system operators, the question is not whether to buy. It is at what multiple and with what capital structure. Hospital EBITDA multiples in recent transaction history have ranged from approximately 6x to 10x, depending on payer mix, geography, and whether the transaction includes affiliated physician groups. Terms for the 2026 transactions have not been publicly disclosed. The vaccine order. Volume risk enters the hospital pro forma President Trump signed an executive order on August 10, 2026, restructuring the federal childhood vaccine schedule. The order reduced the number of vaccines recommended for all children to 11 from the prior 18 and would extend dosing timelines. The administration did not provide immunological evidence supporting the revised schedule. The process itself is significant for hospital investors. The prior system relied on a publicly visible, scientist-led advisory structure. The new schedule was developed in consultation with presidential advisors and by comparing the United States to systems in other countries. The White House did not disclose who specifically advised the president on the order's clinical content. The investment implication runs through two channels. First, pediatric visit volumes at hospital-affiliated outpatient practices are directly tied to the vaccine schedule. Fewer recommended doses, spread over a longer period, reduces appointment frequency and the associated facility and professional fee revenue. Second, if vaccination rates decline in response to reduced federal endorsement, the epidemiological risk of preventable disease outbreaks rises, introducing an unmodeled acute care cost burden with no corresponding reimbursement certainty. The administration reduced recommended childhood vaccines to 11 from 18. The White House provided no immunological evidence for the revised schedule. Hospital systems with significant pediatric and primary care exposure now carry a policy-driven volume risk that did not exist in 2025. The FDA rejection of ITM-11, what a manufacturing rejection cost the sector, the FDA rejected ITM Isotope Technologies Munich's ITM-11 radiopharmaceutical therapy on August 10, 2026, citing manufacturing issues. The drug had been designed to treat gastroenteropancreatic neuroendocrine tumors, and in clinical data reported by ITM in March 2025, produced a median progression-free survival of 23.9 months versus 14.1 months for patients on everolimus, the comparator treatment. The rejection is significant for hospital systems in two ways. First, radiopharmaceuticals are an emerging treatment modality that hospitals and cancer centers have been investing in to support, requiring specialized handling, storage, and administration infrastructure. A competitor to Novodiz's established radiopharma franchise failing on manufacturing grounds, not clinical grounds, signals that the supply chain for this modality remains fragile. Hospital capital invested in radiopharma administration capacity now carries higher execution risk. Second, the rejection removes a competitive pricing alternative to Novodiz's therapy, maintaining Novodiz's pricing power in GEPNet treatment and limiting the cost containment leverage that hospital oncology programs had anticipated from ITM-11's entry. The drug itself showed clinical differentiation. The manufacturing failure does not erase the clinical data. ITM will likely seek a remediation path, but the timeline is uncertain and terms were not disclosed. Capital flows. Who buys what the systems are selling the divestiture wave creates a defined acquisition opportunity set for three buyer categories. Nonprofit regional systems seeking geographic expansion at distressed multiples, private equity-backed for-profit operators with existing platform infrastructure, and real estate-focused investors separating property from operations via sale-leaseback structures. Each carries a different return profile. Private equity-backed operators require EBITDA margin expansion to generate fund-level returns, which historically has meant labor cost reduction and service line rationalization. That strategy faces its own headwinds in a 2026 environment where nursing shortages persist and state legislatures in several markets have enacted minimum staffing ratio requirements. Table: hospital divestiture buyer categories and risk profiles. Transaction-specific multiples not publicly disclosed. The sale-leaseback structure deserves attention. Separating real estate from operations allows health systems to monetize balance sheet assets while retaining clinical control and allows real estate buyers to own healthcare-specific facilities with long-duration leases. This structure grew materially in the 2018 to 2022 period and is positioned to accelerate as systems need liquidity without fully exiting markets. The Placamium view the market is reading the hospital divestiture wave as a balance sheet story. It is also a policy duration story, and that distinction changes where the opportunity sits. Health systems that acquired aggressively made implicit bets on regulatory continuity, that the Affordable Care Act's coverage expansion would hold, that vaccine infrastructure would sustain primary care visit volumes, and that clinical innovation would deliver new revenue streams through oncology and specialty services. All three of those bets are now in question simultaneously, not because the economics of healthcare are broken, but because the federal government is introducing discretionary policy volatility into what was historically a stable reimbursement and clinical framework. The Trump vaccine executive order is not priced into hospital EBITDA models. Neither is the downstream epidemiological risk of reduced vaccination coverage. Nor is the execution risk in emerging modalities like radiopharmaceuticals, where the FDA's ITM rejection demonstrates that supply chain maturity has not kept pace with clinical ambition. Our thesis: the buyers who win in this divestiture cycle will not be those who underwrite to historical EBITDA. They will be those who build policy risk explicitly into their models, buy assets at multiples that absorb a 15 to 20% revenue variance from payer and volume disruption, and structure their capital with enough flexibility to wait out a political cycle. The assets being sold are not bad. The assumptions they were bought under are what failed. The second-order play is in hospital-adjacent services, independent physician groups, outpatient surgical centers, and specialty networks that capture the volume migration away from inpatient settings, regardless of which system owns the acute care bed down the street. The bottom line: 8 large health systems selling hospitals in 2026 marks the end of the consolidation era's most optimistic assumptions. A federal government rewriting vaccine schedules by executive order, an FDA rejecting a clinical stage competitor on manufacturing grounds, and a capital cost environment that has permanently repriced hospital leverage are not temporary headwinds. They are the new operating context. For institutional capital, the actionable position is disciplined entry at cycle-low multiples on assets with defensible payer mix, active avoidance of systems with high pediatric primary care revenue concentration until vaccine policy stabilizes, and selective positioning in sale-leaseback structures where real estate value is separable from operator performance. The sellers know what they are selling. The buyers who do the policy work will know what they are buying.